Welcome to a brand new episode of You Must Be Joking with me, Eric Lawler.
And myself, Will Arwee.
And today's guest is one of Ireland's most distinctive and influential photographers. Her work blends sharp observation, creativity and a real human warmth. Whether she's shooting musicians, artists or everyday moments that say something bigger about who we are, she's worked with some of the biggest names in music, contributed to major publications and is also a powerful voice on creativity, equality and navigating the arts in the real world. She somehow manages to be deeply thoughtful, very funny and relentlessly honest, which is exactly the kind of energy we love. Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for the wonderful Ruth Metzberg!
I'm sorry, I was looking at the door thinking someone else is going to come in. Who are you talking about?
Imagine stopping. Oh, sorry, it's Ruth. Sorry,
that's next week.
So welcome, Ruth Metzberg.
You could just finish the podcast on that, couldn't you? You could just go, listen, thanks very much.
Thanks, that's all I'm here for now. That's worth the parking alone outside.
So the second name isn't your typical Irish name, Ruth?
Because it's not Irish.
There you go.
There you go. Ruth Metzberg.
I know, there's only us in Ireland. Actually, I think there's only a few Metzbergs in the world, to be honest. It's the least popular names in the world.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it's even rare in...
I'm the only Ruth Metzberg in the world. Which is class. It's really handy for like emails and stuff. Like, it's great.
Yeah. Is handy.
Yeah.
Nobody would have robbed your Hotmail account. You would have picked a email account.
I mean, you can pretty much guess my like Gmail account.
Exactly.
Like, it's brilliant. It's like username not taken, doesn't belong. Like, it's like that. Yeah.
Take what you want.
I've had every username I've ever wanted.
And Metzberg comes from Algeria.
Algeria, North Africa.
So
yeah.
So even in Algeria, it's a rare name.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's rare enough. Like.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's a few in France, and so if you look at the like demographics of Metzbergs around the world, there's like a pocketful in France, a few in Algeria, and then there's like -1% in Ireland, and that's us.
where does your name, does it originate from Algeria?
Yeah, from me dad. He's Algerian, so it's class.
I'm seeing another project. I have seen another project. Right,
I know.
There, where I got to photograph all the Metzbergs in the world. It might take you 2 weeks.
I should get it done in a week.
Be grand. I'll get them all together. Be grand.
Like. Part of France, is it one specific part of France?
I don't know now. I'm not that. I have to do the research for this new project I'm doing, apparently. But I'll get on it. Like, yeah, but you know, Algeria was a French colony, so they did swapsies a lot. Like,
you could
call it Raising the Metzberg.
Nice.
What was I going to say to you? So I've known Ruth. I've known you for a few years now.
Yeah.
I've known you in the photography circles. You've done my headshots a couple of times. And I've always been really impressed with who you are as a person, but also the creativity that you have. Like, you don't just... Like, it's well known, I suppose, to people who know you, that you go out and you photograph music festivals and you do commercial shoots and stuff for publications. But... you're always trying to think outside the box. And I love that about you. Always setting yourself challenges. Like, for instance, the big one that comes to mind, we did know each other before we did it, but COVID came and stopped everybody in their tracks. And Ruth said, I see an opportunity.
Christ said tunity. Yeah, I know. Well, I didn't have much of a choice, Eric, because like the bills needed to be paid. And I only know how to earn a living through photography. It's the only thing I've ever done. And I always thought it was going to be foolproof. Like, I always thought like, oh, you know, if I can't do music photography, I'll do weddings, you know, I'll do whatever. And then COVID came and said, no, you won't. You're not going to do anything. And I was bricking it because the entertainment industry, the music industry was the first thing to go. And it was before the government had scrambled. It was before Leo announced the pup and stuff. And I was absolutely terrified because I just moved into a little flat. I had my very first mortgage payments coming up and I couldn't afford them. And I'm not the kind of person that sits on a load of cash. Like, I'm terrible at saving. I'm not independently wealthy or anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't have the money. So I just started throwing ideas at the wall to see what stuck. And I was using kind of... I wanted to photograph people. I wanted to photograph situations. I just needed to get out there and photograph. I needed to make money and I needed to make sure I didn't lose my mind because I'd just gone from doing Glastonbury and doing, you know, big tours with thousands of people. Every single night I'd go to, you know, walk out to stages with like 50,000 people in front of me at 9 o'clock, and now I was shut into my tiny little one bedroom apartment. Wow. And I was losing my mind.
Wow.
My entire industry was gone, my entire livelihood, my entire like social network was
gone. Purpose.
My purpose in life, my identity. Yeah. I'm very much, oh, that's Ruth the photographer. And then that, now I was just like, who am I?
That's why I have you on my phone.
Photographer.
And now,
yeah.
Now you're a real people person, but away from the lens, like when you're not.
I love chatting. I love chatting to people.
Chat the box, yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I love people one on one. A group of people, I hate them. You're walking behind someone on the street and they're walking really slow. I hate people.
Yeah.
But like, I love.
The 60s around the table in the bar go, look, if we could just go over to that corner, talk to us individually.
Individually, one on one. I have a schedule for the night. Like, yeah, I love chatting. I do. I need people. And I realised that. So I went and I did this project where I was going around. I started with my mates, you know, in the 2 kilometres, 5 kilometres. And I just said to them, listen, come to your window at twilight when the sun, like when the sun just dips enough that the sky gets really blue and everything is gorgeous light. You know what I mean? The houses become really inviting and gorgeous and warm. And I said, come to your window and I'll take your picture. Family portrait. In the window at twilight, and it looked really good. It was really poignant, kind of was like a bit emotion, and I was like, this is something, do you know. I put it online, went viral, people really wanted to be involved. I woke up to hundreds of emails in my inbox, people going, here, can I do this, can you come to my house. So I did 150 households in 2 months.
Wow.
And I turned it into a book, and that book saved my life.
Yeah.
100%. Saved me life, saved me house, saved me bank balance. Like, honestly.
Was it really that significant for you, Ruth? Yeah.
Oh, it was massive.
Amazing.
I became, and then it was a different trajectory for me as an artist in my career, because I'd lived my life up until then as a music photographer. I had toured with like Arcade Fire. I toured with Hozier. I'd done all that. And I was very much pigeonholed, but I was happy to be pigeonholed, if you get me. But I always wanted to kind of branch out a bit and be recognised as an artist. And in Ireland, we don't recognise music photography as an artist. Art form. We're very snobby.
Okay.
You know, the art world is very,
so
very snobby.
It would be recognised a lot more in other countries.
Oh, absolutely.
Really,
yeah. 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 Okay. But in Ireland, they can turn their nose up at it and like that, you know. But so I struggled a bit with that because I was like, I so believe music photography is an art. Like, I think it's an absolute art to do it. But I wanted to branch out and do other things. So this was perfect. It was a lovely little kind of segue for me into doing something else. And then I got to do a book. And I never in a million years thought my very first hardback book would be on windows. I became known as the windows photographer. I was no longer the music photographer. I was the windows photographer, and that's how people know me. They stop me in the shops going, oh, you're that girl that did the windows. And it sounds like I'm after installing PVC windows in someone's gap.
Microsoft employee.
That's what I'm thinking, the front of the book, you know, the windows. When you go into your computer. But I suppose as well, Ruth, it just goes to show that as well as that, you're not a one-trick pony. Like, it's not just it's not just festivals. It's not just, you know, bands and musicians or anything like that. That you can think outside the box. You can use your artistic skills and you can hone in onto something else. And as well as that, very cleverly at the same time, knowing that you needed to do something else, knowing that bills had to be paid, stuff had to be done. And as you said, artists on the whole got, because we are now artists, Eric.
Oh, I know, we recognise finally.
Like, so,
God,
like we all took it up the Brenda Fricker, like, do you know what I mean? No one got any mortgage payments paid for, no one got any bills paid. You got the magic money of $350 a week, but I mean, what was that going to do for you? Like, so it was great that you seen something else and you went, this has got, well, when you seen the message, you knew yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, it had to be done. Like, you know what I mean? It was one of those moments. Do you know what? It was the only moment in my life. And I'm really grateful for the PUP payment because it did alleviate some pressure, right? And it's the only moment in my entire life where my freelancer little brain got switched off, because it was, you can't hustle. There's no hustle to be had.
Yeah.
So, like, it was someone saying, you'll just have to sit and be quiet. And I've never had that, because I've always had that urge to keep going. Let's try something new, try something new. So once that was gone and once the PUP payment came in and I was like, well, now I can actually just do the art for art's sake. So no one sponsored this project. No one was funding this project. I was going around and I used the PUP payments. I lived on next to nothing to do it. You know what I mean? And I, you know, filled the car, drove to West Cork and drove back in the same night because you couldn't stay anywhere. You know, so I was doing all that. But I was doing it for the art's sake. There was no brand commission. Like, normally I'd work for, you know, someone would go, oh, we want you to do a portrait project for Tesco's for whatever. Yeah. And I'd go and do it. And it was a commission. This wasn't it. This was a personal project. It was something that I wanted to do for the people it started out for, I wanted to do it for the people of Finglas, for the people in my community, and then it became, I want to do it for the people of Ireland. And I want to do, leave an archive, a legacy behind me that people, other people will enjoy. And I've never had that opportunity to just be an artist for art's sake before. So when the pub payment came in, it almost gave me permission to be like, okay, you can stop the commercial hustle, you can do the art that no one's going to pay for, but people are going to love. And that gave me a whole new perspective. Then, you know, we climbed out of the COVID hole like everyone did and went on to do, I went on to do another, I've just done 2.5 years with Hosier around the world. And that was back to what I was doing, you know. But all the while in my head, I'm like, I want to go back to doing art for art's sake, yeah. Right? Which is,
you got the bug.
I have it. Yeah. And I know it's so difficult because it's so underfunded. Do you know what I mean? But it's something that people really love. And I'm still getting messages from people about the book, the COVID book, and people saying, like, that got me through the hole. That got me through and it's so meaningful to me.
It had a lovely effect
me.
For us as well as a family, I have to say.
Yeah, you were in it. Like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean.
You're in the book.
It's
like.
me, Wales and the kids and the dog at the window.
Yeah.
As twilight is arriving. And it's a beautiful
picture. Yeah, you were one of the first because you were around the corner.
So emotional looking back at it and go, gee, that was a crazy time. But at what point, Ruth, though, when you said, right, you started with Finglas and then you started doing Dublin, then you said, right, I'm taking this around. At what point did you feel you were onto something that could be as legacy defining almost as the book was?
Do you know what? I think I knew from the very first photograph.
Really?
Yeah, because it was of my friends, Maeve and Paul, and they just had a baby. And that would have been a house. They're out in Donabay, and it was before even the 2 kilometre, 5 kilometre came in. But we knew something was coming. Leo Varadkar was about to announce the 2 weeks of, you know, whatever. And I was like, something's coming here. So their house, I would have been just so naturally just gone in. The door was always open. I'd walk in, I'd stick the kettle on, I'd be like, "Hell yes!" Do you know what I mean? It was a home from home. And then suddenly that was like, oh, you can't come over. You know what I mean? We were very sketch around each other. We were very afraid.
We were, yeah.
You know, and they had a new baby and everything. So it was like, oh, I don't want to bring a virus into their house. Nobody knows what this is. And then I told them to come to the window and I took a picture of them with the baby. And then I was just like waving at them going, all right, see ya. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't get in for a cup of tea. And I went and I sat in the car. I looked at the back of the camera and I bawled. Because I was like, I want nothing more than to be in that house and to be part of that family, you know, because everything just felt so isolating, so scary, so lonely. Yeah. And I just imagined that I can't be the only one feeling that, especially people living on their own. You know, everyone was terrified. But this picture somehow said, OK, there's going to be a goodness to this thing. If we have to stay at home, it's going to be all right. And that was what I was like, let's get this message to other people. So I thought, if I'm having this feeling looking at this picture, maybe other people will, you know. And then I posted it online with a few other ones that I'd done over the next couple of weeks. The Irish Times put it on the front cover. And from then, it took off. Then after the Irish Times put it on the front cover, they put 12 of them up. I got 4 different book publishers in my inbox in the same day.
Wow.
Going, here, do you want to do a book?
Wow.
And who did you eventually go with? Like, what? I know, look, you've got 4 publishers and come here. That's great in itself because you can
really choose.
Yeah, well, not only that, you can play them off each other as well, like, so to speak.
Yeah,
being
you
a
can.
Clever young woman like yourself. But I mean, why did you take who you took? Was it the few quid or was it?
No, it was because they had a cute little penguin on the cover.
Deadly.
There you go.
Deadly.
I went with Penguin Random House because they're so well known, and I grew up with Penguin books, and I was like, "That's gonna be class."
Why are we doing a Penguin book?
Why are we doing a Penguin?
Yeah, great.
So that was it. Like.
No, because when you better reason to think
exactly, but when you do think about it, like, I was just listening to you there talking about that, and I'm kind of transporting myself back to that time. And it was a very, very frightening time. Yeah. And my mother, God be good to her, who's passed since, had got COPD, and we just could not afford for my mum to get COVID.
Yeah.
Now, come here. We went in every couple of days.
Yeah.
We FaceTimed her as much as we could. We left the messages outside the door. We wore the mask, the gloves, all that stuff. And I was like, there's kind of a time where you say to yourself, when is this going to fucking end? Like, and especially for, not only for us that are in the arts industry, yourself and myself and Eric, but I mean for the ordinary Joe Soap that's so used to being busy, so used to being around his friends. For people that suffered with their mental health before that, that needed people around them, that were now left on their own, for the elderly to be left on their own as well. There was a lot of stuff. And I watched a programme over in Norway about COVID. And I just seen these.
Norway, watching the program.
No. I've been to Norway actually a few times. I'm actually going to Norway again next January to a place called Trysil where I go skiing.
Next January.
Time next year.
Very nice.
You're more than welcome to come yourself as well. You can bring the dog. But I watched this and I watched how this disease that came from Wuhan in China had come to this town, this picturesque town in Norway, and watched a woman. Burying her mum and looking in the window or in a hospital bed. And this is what kind of always throws me about COVID, is that I could not understand how strangers, even though they were doctors and nursing staff and medical staff, can go into a room covered and treat your mother or your father or your loved one. But you cannot wear that same stuff and go in and hold a hand sitting beside them in a bed. It must have been horrible for people that passed.
Yeah.
And there's 10 people at a funeral. Like, what do you do? Like,
I know. And the book that I wrote is full of that because it was really important for me to tell everybody's story. It was a real representation of the time.
What's the title of it again, Ruth?
Windows Project. Ruth, the Windows Project.
Yeah, yeah.
But like in it, there's 44 stories where I've written people's like lives during it, right? And there's the happy things, because obviously there was happy things. People are going off, they're not baking banana bread.
Yeah.
People are DJing from their gaff. People are doing quizzes. Do you know what I mean? So there's all of that kind of stuff. And people are just getting sloshed and having a great time.
Wow.
But then there's the reality. I tell the story of grief, like through other people's experiences. My friend Lorraine, who worked at a nursing home, who just saw, and she was friends with, she was like the entertainment coordinator kind of person, and she was, her whole workplace was decimated, you know, and she lost friend after friend after friend after friend. And then there's Fidelma and Martin, who, and she's a doctor, and they couldn't spend their 25th wedding anniversary together, so like they separated the house down the middle because she couldn't, they couldn't risk contaminating her, you know. So there's, and then there's, you know, there's stories like you said, people burying their mother and they couldn't say goodbye.
Yeah.
And it was just horrific. I think we've had to block out what we went through. It was a collective trauma, but it was trauma, like.
Yeah.
So we've had to, I think we've done a great job of going, you know, that thing that we went through, let's not talk about it. And
I try and bring it up with me jokes.
There's no shadow of a doubt. There's no doubting yet. There was a lot of tragedy in it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of darkness in it. There was a lot of grief. There was a lot of people that got fucked up. But there was some funny moments in it as well. And I remember one message going around, because I was thinking, being in recovery and someone that's been off drugs for a long, long time, I was thinking to myself, Jesus, imagine I was still using at that time.
Yeah.
Like what it would be like to get out and try score. But there was a message going around on WhatsApp, and it was some fella messaging his mate going, hey, how's it going? I know all this COVID-19 all's going on. But does anyone know, is Anto still down 4 for 50? Himself.
Beautiful.
That's fucking brilliant. Like, he's still got the bit of sympathy for what's going on, but he still needs 4 for 50, like, you know?
Salt of the earth.
Ah, lovely fella, yeah.
So, obviously, you said, geez, that's great that from day one you went, you know, I'm at something special here. The publishers came in, the book got launched, and straight away it was a massive success, wasn't it?
Do you know, I think people, I was posting about it every day as I was doing it. Do you know what I mean? Because so people,
there was an anticipation.
People
then,
were with me for the journey. Yeah. They were seeing the stories as I was posting. So by the time the book came out, people felt involved. They felt like it was their project.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a very open book, as you probably know, on Instagram. Like, I'll tell everyone the real story of my life. Like, I don't keep getting away from people. So like, I'm happy to share those stories as I go, because I want people to feel invested in the work. Like, you know, I'm a documentary photographer when I'm in that world. I'm just telling other people's stories. I almost don't have a role in it. Like, it's just my job to communicate other people's stories to everyone else. Like, so it's good to be as open as I possibly can. So then by the time the book came out, like, I'd already sold 1,000 copies on my website.
Wow.
Because people were just, they wanted to buy it off me. And I would kind of just say, like, here, look, I'm doing this book. And everyone's like, amazing, fair play to you. Mm. And they also liked seeing a success story from COVID. Yes. Do you know?
Yeah.
People are very kind.
It was a good news story.
It was a good news story. So yeah. And people are inherently kind. And I'm finding that out a lot, like, as I go and as I hear people's stories. People are just so generous and so lovely that they do want to see people doing well, yeah. Do you know? Yeah. Which is really... And one of the things that when I was doing this project, you know, I'd never meet these people really. I just came up to their window yeah. and kind of shouted at them through glass. Like, but what there would always be is they'd be like hollering like, behind the bins, look behind the bins. And I'm like, what? And I go behind the bins and there's a bottle of wine left.
Ah,
for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
you know, people have yeah. left little like bats.
That's yeah. amazing.
And it was just gorgeous to think that people were going out of their way, going to the shops, and the, you know, when we couldn't do it for themselves, were going out and buying me a little thing. And I'm just like, oh, stop being so lovely, or melt me heart. And yeah. I cry, I get in the car and I cry.
An emotional rollercoaster for you.
It was cool.
But like what you said, look, what I mean, when the people are your walk,
yeah.
they have to be part of the walk.
Absolutely.
And it's great, and it's like, there's no discrimination. There's no, you know, it don't care what colour you are, where you're yeah. from, whatever. You know, I'm sure there's so many variations of people yeah. in that book and so many different stories.
You know, I'm very meticulous in my projects. In Twilight Together and the project I'm doing now, is that it has to be an extremely fair representation of Ireland and Ireland's demographic, right?
As it currently is.
As it currently stands. So in 2020, I got the stats from the Central Statistics Office to see how many traveller people are there in the country, how many black people are there in the country, how many like atheists, Protestants, how many this, that and the other. And then I made sure out of my 150 households that the right percentage of people were represented.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And that meticulous.
I have to be. Room. Because I grew up as a mixed race child in Ireland, right, in the 90s or whatever. And the only representation I saw of Arab women on the news and whatever was awful. I never saw myself be represented in a really nice way.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what, fuck that. Like, I have to make sure people see the real Ireland, you know. So, yeah, so I am very meticulous about it, and I love doing it, and it's something then that I can come 5 years later in an interview and stand by that and go, yeah, that's it. And but also for me, it means I'm getting to meet people who are outside my own little echo chamber. Do you know what I mean? My own social bubble, do you know? Because like, I'm not just going to meet like fucking 39-year-old photographers
that's
from
Dublin.
That's
hugely important as well, Ruth. I think fair play to you.
Yeah. So now I have friends from the travelling community. I have friends, like, I've loads of different friends that I never would have had before.
Yeah. Friends from the right wing. Lovely people.
It is because it owns.
Do you know what? That's a thing. Like, yeah. and you know, so the like the new project I'm doing, I'm going out meeting people every day, and there's going to have to be an element of maybe I have to talk to someone who's a little bit right wing and see what the crack is.
We want to delve into that now in a second, but before we do talk about your new project, you mentioned earlier on that when you wanted to be a photographer. From a fairly young age?
I was always a photographer.
You were always just taking pictures with disposable cameras?
When
and all
I
that.
Was three.
Yeah.
My dad used to sell camera equipment in the 90s, right?
It was always going
to
happen.
Yeah. And you know what? They couldn't afford to put me into childcare because my ma worked as well. Like, I think she was cleaning houses. And it was before I started school. And my dad used to have a little van and he'd drive around the country stocking photo shops, like camera shops. And so he just used to put me in the back of the van and I'd be playing with all the gear.
So you knew it was going to develop, did you?
Yeah. So it was class. So it means like I got to know John Gunn on Wexford Street. I got to know, you know, all these little camera shops around Ireland. Yeah, from when I was a tiny child.
Was it music photography that you wanted to get into from the start?
Do you know what? I only discovered music photography. That was a thing. When I was a teenager, I used to hang around Central Bank, do you know?
Of course you did.
Of course I did. I used to hang Central Bank. And there was a gig... There was an all-ages event that had just started called Blast, right? I'm going to give people PTSD now if they were there.
And it was...
They brought me in to... They just came around to Central Bank, Rob Stevenson, your man that started this whole thing, and he was just like, here, get a few teenagers around. We'll bring them into the Temple Grand Music Centre. We're going to put on a gig. And he goes, can you talk? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you're the MC. I was 14, right?
Wow.
I hadn't got a clue, like, and I was taking pictures and stuff, but I never thought it could be a career. It was just how I used to, just how I used to talk. I used to talk with a camera instead of talking like that. And then I saw this man who was taking pictures And I was like, what are you doing? And I'll never forget, his name was Roger Woolman, and he called himself the Irish music photographer on his website. And he was like, I'm taking pictures of the bands. I was like, for what? He's like, it's my job. And I was like, fuck off.
Job? You mean you get paid for it?
I don't think he did, but I just thought he did. And I was
You're
like,
just saying he did.
I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. I was like, I'm going to do that. And do you know what he said to me? And I'll never forget this, because it was great and I needed someone to say that. Where's your fucking camera then?
Brilliant.
And I was like, oh yeah, you're dead right.
A van full of cameras.
Yeah, wait dear. So I went, and then the very next Saturday I was like, I had the camera with me and I lined up all the bands, all the teenage bands, and I was like, I'm your photographer, stand there and I'm taking your picture.
No way.
Brilliant. I just started. I was a little diva. Like,
that's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I was so confident when I had a camera in my hand.
Right.
If I didn't have a camera in my hand, I was a shell of a girl.
Right.
Mad.
Couldn't talk, couldn't anything. I was so shy. I was painfully shy. Put a camera in my hand, next level.
That's great, because it's like you turn. It's, I suppose it's like when we get on stage and you take the microphone, you become this different person.
Yeah,
no,
yeah. Extension of your
you know, it's like yeah. It's like, you know, Superman opens up his shirt and it's like yeah, you know what I mean. But
it is.
It's, and it's an amazing look. You know what they say: a picture paints a thousand words. Like, and not only that, what might mean something to you or Eric in a picture could mean something completely different to me. So you draw your own perception.
Mm-hmm.
You draw your own take on it. I know you've seen some beautiful photographs, you know, all through my lifetime.
Mm.
Horrific photographs, really nice photographs, and you just make it, you make of them as you want. And there are some, I love taking a photograph. I have an eye for photography and I do take a nice picture. I've got into this thing from a fellow that I know who's a photographer, and he takes photographs upside down on the phone.
Yeah.
And I've started doing that and it looks really, really well. But I would like to do something, not obviously on the level that you're doing, but just I had a couple of pictures that I have in the house over the fireplace are pictures that I've taken myself.
Do you put your glasses on when you're taking pictures?
No, I don't.
Unless
no, because it bangs off the lens.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think your probably next step then is to get a camera, like, instead of your phone. Like,
no, I will buy a camera, definitely. It's I think it's a great skill that you have, and I mean, you're capturing moments, really.
Yeah.
You know, even with the likes of Hosea or whoever you're travelling with, that stuff that has been just caught, like, it's about the time and a lot of the time, isn't it?
I mean, it is documentary, it's archival, do you know what I mean? I've photographed his career progression and everything, and that's obviously important then for, like, music fans and for Irish history and everything. So that's, you know, that's a level of importance. But I always say, I mean, photography is such a broad spectrum. There's photography everywhere, do you know what I mean? You look around the room, there's going to be photographs everywhere. We're bombarded with imagery, like, you know, and people put so much thought and effort and style and money into these photo shoots. But honest to God, my best photographs, the ones that I'm most proud of, is not the ones on billboards or the cover of magazines. It's not album covers, even though I really love getting a good vinyl album cover. It's not that. My highest achievement is always the photographs that are on people's mantelpieces, because they're the ones that mean the absolute most.
Yeah.
And you know what? And the sad thing is, but it's the art form I respect the most is the one that sits on top of the coffin. Do you know?
Okay.
And I will always, if anyone asks me to do a photograph for them because they think that their time is coming, I absolutely will move heaven and earth to do it.
Let me tell you something. If I pass anytime soon, that photograph I was telling you about, my ma will ensure that that's on the coffin. Myself and Ruth did a photo shoot a few years ago, and it was very, you were saying you wish you had more time at the time.
Mm.
We did it anyway, but there was one picture that Ruth took of me, and I don't even remember it being taken. And that's the beauty of working with Ruth, is that you make people feel really relaxed and
that's
comfortable.
Good.
And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't getting all Zoolander with the cameras, and I was completely relaxed. And I think I just looked out the window or something, and you caught that moment as I looked out the window and had a bit of a smile on my face. And my ma says to me to this day, Eric, that's one of my favourite photographs of you of all time.
That's the highest compliment you can give me. If someone's ma likes the photograph, that's
she
it. Box ticks.
Love it.
Because your ma knows you better than anyone else.
Sure.
I need someone's friends and their parents to say, you know what, that's really them. That's important to me, to make sure your character comes through in the picture. It has to have the essence of it. That's all I'm trying to do in life with portraiture. With music photography, it's the same thing. I want the girls in the front row to leave the concert, go home, check the Instagram the next day, and remember what it feels like to be there, to be like, oh my God, she summed up the entire atmosphere, the vibe of the show in one photograph, and then I'm like, job done. That's
you're just back from a 2 year world tour with Hozier.
2.5 years.
2.5 years. My God.
6 months are very important.
Oh Jesus, that was the kicker. The last six months was hard.
What was the shithole of a country that you were in, and what was the best one?
Do you know what, we did a lot of America.
Our best place. Yeah. Where in America was a skid mark?
Oh, here, where there's do so I many start? Of them. America is so vast and varied, do you know what I mean? But we did it a few times around. We ended up back in some places because it's such a long tour, and he was very successful in America. He's more successful in America than I think anywhere else in the world. Like, yeah. It's doing massive stages.
Not a lot of Irish artists can say that either.
Yeah, he's huge, and it's such a huge achievement for him. But like, I ended up in places in America. I'm vegan, like, and there's places where I can't eat because they're just like, you're a what, darling? No. And I'm like, oh,
why don't you go out and eat your grass?
Yeah, pretty much. Just like, for fuck's sake. But like, there's some great places as well. Just can't think of them right now.
maybe the blue states. LA can be nice. Parts of LA can be nice.
I didn't gel well with LA.
Did you not?
No, I didn't. I like New York.
Boston.
Denver, Colorado. Denver, Colorado.
I was leading to there, Ruth, with the 2.5 years was every night pretty much the guy has a gig.
Yeah.
Which means every single night you've got a gig.
Yeah.
Are you going to ever doing every single show?
Every single show. So I take pictures of every single show, and then during the day we might do portraits or content. So we could be doing like a little video or something like that. And then there might be a fan meet and greet. So I'd be taking pictures of all the fans meeting them. What else do I do? I shot and edited a music video while we were on the road for his song Too Sweet. Yeah. So there's a lot to it.
I suppose what I'm asking as well is then, like, if you're doing that every night, is the set list is pretty much the same. Are you getting to the point where, like, oh, not.
Yeah.
Or are you just so distracted by the work that you've got to do?
It became a mission for me to photograph the show in a different way every night. So I'd set myself challenges because the lights don't change. You know, they're all programmed and stuff. The venue, when you get to that level, the venues are so big that they don't change that much. Yeah. Back in 2019, when we toured the first time, we would have been doing like 3,000 capacities. And they're gorgeous. You know, you're all around Europe. Some of them were like, this used to be a circus in 1940. And it was class. Venues are all, or you're playing an opera hall or something. Yeah, but this is just like, you're playing a hangar.
They're all the same.
So you're trying to make it look aesthetically pleasing and different, but everything's the same. And it was hard. It was hard to pull that out. Like, what can I say? I've probably seen that show about more than 500 times.
Jeez.
Yeah. So it was a lot. Like, it definitely tested me as an artist, as a human.
I'm just laughing, thinking to myself, can you imagine someone that doesn't really know are getting the tickets to go and see Hosea for Christmas?
They're like, thanks. I'll be
That's
at the bar.
Exactly where my head went. The minute she said 500 times, I was like, oh,
I'll be at the bar. No, and like, you know, I'm photographing one person. Yeah, one person every single night. So I'd be staring intently at his face for 2 hours. And then, like, I used to tell him this, and just because it was funny, I'd be like, and then I'd do about 2 or 3 hours of editing on the tour bus then, right, afterwards. So I wouldn't get to bed till about 4 a.m., right? And that's a good... Four to 6 hours of staring at this young fella's head. And then I'd go into the bed, into the bunk, and I'd pull my little curtain and I'd turn off the lights lying down there. I close my eyes and I see his face. Like, it was burned on my retina.
Burned into your retina, yeah.
So it's like, I can't, like.
Holy shit.
And you know, if I didn't have so much grawn and respect for him, it would have been difficult. But he's a lovely man, so
there
it's great. Yeah.
I'm glad you get on.
It's great to work with someone who you do get on with, you know.
You couldn't do that job for 2.5 years if you didn't like him.
I can't imagine.
You couldn't. Because you just end up getting sick.
So what comes next after doing something like that? What do you do? Like, have you stuff in the pipeline? Or are you going to go out with another band?
So I'm dipping out of music photography for a while. I'm not going to say forever, because I say that every year and I'm like, oh, I'm done. Especially after like Electric Picnic. I did like 15 Electric Picnics and I was every single year I'd be like, I'm never doing another festival again. And then I'd always come back. So I'm not going to say I'm not going to go back to music, but I'm taking definitely a year off and I've switched gears completely.
Comedy now.
Yeah.
I think she could.
Move over.
I think you're very, very funny.
I need to be sitting on that side of the room.
Come over. I'll sit there.
Take pictures of us. comedy.
Oh no, I want to do comedy.
And come in, I ask you, your choice of camera, does it remain the same one? Like, is it a Canon Mark IV, or is it you know, like, what is it? Do you use different tools for different events, or do you stick to the one camera and just different lenses?
I'm a Nikon girl. My dad got me my first Nikon camera, my first SLR,
cool,
when I was a kid, and then you always tend to stick with the brand. It's very hard to move brand because all of your lenses will be, you know, with that.
With that.
So it's grand. And now I'm very lucky to be endorsed by Nikon. So I was like,
no way.
Yeah.
Wow. Nikon would like
so what happens then? So every year that they, if they bring out something new, are you kind of...
Yeah, I can trial it, can it for them.
A brand ambassador.
Yeah, it's great.
Instead of Nikki, go for Nikon.
Do you know what? I had to start learning how to do video in the last few years, and I absolutely hate video.
Do you?
I can't do it. It's horrible. It's a horrible format.
Is it just the editing, or are the actual videoing itself?
Videoing itself. It took me ages to switch my brain from stills to moving images, because it's a different way of communicating. Do you know what I mean? You can tell a lot in a still frame, but you have to tell a different type of story with moving. But then when I landed on the Hozier tour, I was politely told.
How did you land that?
How did I land the Hozier tour? I'd done the Arcade Fire tour, Hozier was looking for a new photographer. His management had put the word out in the Dublin music scene going, here, we need new photographers, anyone know? And about 15 people were like, Ruth will do it. So it was word of mouth. People are sound.
Your work's all itself.
People are sound. Do you know? So I got recommended.
The difference there with Arcade Fire is you were saying you had to focus on Hozier. With Arcade Fire, there's a few of them you can focus
on. Yeah, there's nine of them on stage. Yeah. So it was a very different show to shoot Arcade Fire to Hozier, do you know what I mean? But I fell into the Hozier quite easy, but I didn't do video at the time, and they did ask me, they're like, do you do video? I was like, I don't actually, so if that means I can't take the job, I'll leave it, because I'm really allergic to it. And the manager was like, does your camera do video? And I was like, yeah.
Every camera does video.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, it does. It's like, grand, we're not looking for Spielberg, so you'll be grand. And I was like, oh God. And then when I kind of got away with it the first tour, and then this tour started, and then we were going, I landed in Nashville, and they were like, Grant, we've got 2 weeks of rehearsals and then we're going on tour, and you need to make a music video for this new hit single. And I was like, I've never made a music video, what the fuck do I do? But they were so confident in my abilities, even though I had no abilities. It was brilliant. They were so lovely and trusting, and they let me learn on the job, completely learn on the job. And I was googling how to make a music video, literally.
Were you?
Yeah, I hadn't got a clue. I had to download all Adobe Premiere, and then do YouTube tutorials. So the iPad was teaching me how to do it while I was doing it. But this was a music video that now 250 million people have seen.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like you're doing it for some local artist down the pub.
I bet none of them know that. They probably think they know, but you know what I'm saying? For someone looking at that, they go,
I don't know.
Jesus, they really knew what
they
were doing.
Every 10th comment, there's someone going, this is shite.
And
they're not wrong.
One out of 10 ain't bad.
Come here, if Picasso had put up one of his great pictures on Instagram, 1 in 10 comments would be, this is shite. Yeah, what the fuck is that?
Listen, there's some great videographers out there, more power to them. I'm not one of them, and I'll leave them at it.
It's great as well that they had the belief in you when you don't have the belief in yourself.
Yeah.
And there's that looseness, and it kind of builds a relationship with the management and the tour manager for him to go, listen, come here, you'll be grand. And once you kind of get that clarification yourself and say to yourself, do you know what? Actually, it will. I'll get by,
And you do get by, and you did it, and I'm very proud that I did it. But Hozier's management team is all women-led. It's all strong, female, very independent businesswomen, and they want to give other women a leg up
as well. They're empowering women everywhere.
So I think when I got hired, first off, I got hired because I was a great music photographer, but then I also got hired because I was an Irish woman.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was let's give it to her. Do you know what I mean? And that needs to happen a lot more
100%.
In male-dominated industries like the music industry.
Yeah. Totally agree with you.
We need to be hiring more women and giving them the chance, because men are awful for just going, oh, give it to your man's son. Do you know what I mean?
Nepotism.
Yeah, and it's not we need to give it to, we need to actually just encourage women to come in and take it up. Yeah. We don't have, they say when women are applying for jobs and when men are applying for jobs, and there's 10 things that you need to be qualified for. If men have 4 of the 10 things that apply. If women don't have all 10, they won't apply.
Wow, right,
yeah,
okay.
It's a weird thing. Like, so we do, I always try and adopt that sensibility. I'm always like, all right, I have to think like a man here. And that's just being fucking mad confident. Like, I'm always just like, right, I'm going to enter the mind frame of a straight white man. And I'm just like, go do it. Like,
yeah, I can do anything.
Yeah. I can do anything. I can't, but I think I can.
Well, I've known your work for years, the same route, though. The music photography as well. I remember one time being really jealous because like one of my favourite bands, one of my all time favourite bands is Stone Roses, you did them. Was it Marley or Phoenix?
Marley.
And I was at that gig, probably out of my face, but still, I was at that gig, and the next morning just feeling so nostalgic and buzzing that I'd actually seen them, you know, because they formed a huge part of my growing up, I suppose. And then I was looking at Instagrams going, oh my God, Ruth was there and she was the official photographer. What the fuck?
I know.
If you wouldn't know your head, you'd have been out the ringer.
Yeah.
And I think every ex-boyfriend I've ever had woke up and looked at my Instagram and went, fucking bitch.
Like, oh, roses!
You were like that on your profile picture.
Yeah, like, should have stuck around.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
In that instance, though, Ruth, do you have any contact with the band at all? Did they speak to you or anything like that, or just the management? Maybe
I met them. Yeah, I did. So I was MCD again, just through reputation. MCD would have known me just kicking around, doing all the jobs and doing bits for Hot Press and stuff, and then. Stone Roses, either the tour manager or production manager, would have went, yo, MCD, do you have any leads on a good photographer at the gig next week? And they were like, Ruth will do it. And then I would have been in touch with the management and they would have been done it up that like that. So like, can you meet us here at this time? So I would have met them like at 6 o'clock at the house in Marley. And then I was introduced very briefly to the band
or whatever,
and some of the tour, and like, you know, they don't really care. They're only having a local photographer per show, so it's they're not
building relationships all the time.
They don't need to make friends with me, do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's how you and it's more the fact that they see me and then they don't get a fright on stage going, who's this young one on stage with us?
Right,
do you know what
right.
I mean, that I'm a stage invader or whatever. So it's just to put a face to me and my role. And then I did that show, and that was the biggest show I'd done so far in my career, and the band were so nice and the crew were so nice. They were like, well, the crew weren't so nice, but the band were so nice, and they were like, you can stand wherever you want, don't go here, but everything else. And I kind of said to the drummer, I was like, can I stand on the back of your riser? And he was like, yeah, no bother. And I was like, class, right? Because I knew in my heart to hearts, I was just like, this is a massive gig, I want to get that really, really wide shot from behind the drummer where you can see all the crowd and stuff.
Wide
and I was
shot.
Like, class. So I, you know, mid show, I was like, now the sun's going down, this is the perfect time to do that shot, like it's going to be stunning. So I switched to the wide lens and I crawled out on stage and I gave the drummer a nod that he knew I was going to creep up behind him. I was ready to go and I was on my little honkers, and then I perched up to take the picture. I nearly shat myself because I've never seen a crowd so fucking big.
Oh, really?
I was like,
when did this hit you then?
I was like, that's what 40,000 people looks like.
Wow.
I was like, I'd never seen 40,000 people.
Yeah.
And like, as far as the eye could see, there were only little dots, like there were like little pixels on the horizon, and I was like,
wow. But I saw that picture.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It
got, you know, I really just kind of got into the zone and went,
snap.
Yeah, I loved doing it because it was a big responsibility. And I know that loads of other photographers who were massive Stone Roses fans would have killed me for it.
Yeah.
Like, so I took it seriously and I tried my hardest. Like, and it was good crack.
Yeah.
Like, it was good crack.
But not only that, I mean, other bands see that, other artists see that, and they go, fucking hell, you know, pardon the pun, this girl has a knife for photography. Look.
Well, it's just that she didn't fuck it up. Like.
Well, come here, listen.
That's 90% of it. 90% of it. She didn't fuck it up.
Look, when you're taking, it's like, you know, any artist, like when you're taking shots of stuff that other people kind of are daring and to do, like other photographers probably would go, geez, I wouldn't ask him, could I stand up on the back of, you know, you know what I'm saying? Where if you don't ask, you don't get, like.
Yeah, I guess there is that, like, and then there's a lot of photographers that go over the top with that, and then they stand where they're not supposed to stand to get the shot, and that's equally frowned upon.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So you have
it's an invasion of privacy.
You have to respect people's boundaries, especially musicians. It's their stage, it's their gig, it could be the biggest gig of their life. You don't want to impose, you don't want to be the person. So you have to know absolutely when to push and take the photograph, just as much as you need to know when not to take the photograph. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I think I've been allowed backstage so much in my career, is because I don't take the pictures of them in their jocks. Do you know what I mean?
So, well, you had not the ones you've published yet in any
way. I have a whole hard drive of black belts ready to go. Like,
artists in their jocks.
I swear to God, if I died tomorrow, lads, I'll tell you where it is.
That's another book
called the Exhibit.
Just publish all that. Make a mint, go pub class. Like.
When you do it, and you're singing "Take Me to Church."
This is what he does. I was going to say. So let's move. Let's bring this on nicely now, Ruth, to your current project.
Yeah, the big mammoth of a project I've lumbered myself with.
A day for my understanding of it is, you're going to take a portrait of people, different people from all across different walks of life, different backgrounds. As you mentioned earlier on, you did the thing on the, what was it? What's it called?
Twilight Together.
So 365 days, 365 subjects.
Yeah.
You're going to go and chat to these people and take a picture of them.
Yep.
Give us more detail.
That's it. That's essentially it. Like, it's kind of, it is, I always say, the evolution of the last one, the Windows thing, because what I found most enjoyed about that project was the chats. Do you know what I mean? Getting to know different people and then also representing Ireland in a very fair way. So I thought, like, when I was out on the road with Hosier and stuff, and I was like, okay, I'm just looking at the same man every day, grand. I want to look at different people and I wanted to hear stories. And for me, like, you know this, Eric, like, if I have someone for an hour to take a portrait with, if they have been commissioned or whatever, they're like, you know, someone's like, oh, it's a head of whatever, like, go meet them and take their picture. And I'll be like, grand, how long have I got? An hour, grand. I probably spend 40 minutes talking to that person before I take a single picture, because it's so important to get to know the person before I try and capture them, right? And then I love the chats, and I love what comes out of those chats. And I was always thinking, like, that's stories, that's people's stories, and it's really important. And I thought, well, all right, I want to start capturing those stories. And I initially thought, like, okay, I'm just going to take their lovely portrait, try and make it as characterful as possible, try represent them really, wherever they might see fit, whether they're a pig farmer down in Kerry, whether they're a lumberjack, whether they work in Spar, whatever it is, I'll just go and I'll photograph them. And then I was thinking, I'll write their story. And then I thought, do you know, when I write someone else's story, I'm kind of taking away their autonomy. It's someone's story is better, always going to be better off if it's told by themselves. So I want to give them back their ownership of their own story. And the only way to really do that is let them tell it in their own voice. And voices are so important. Mm. Accents are so important, right? And, like, especially because our island of Ireland has so many different accents. It's gorgeous. And I think that's crucial to get to know someone as well, because you can instantly locate them. You instantly know. So it's like, right, I'm going to start doing it as an audio visual series. And then that progressed into, okay, now it's going to be a daily podcast, a daily photo shoot. At the end of the year, we're going to have 365 of these portraits in this podcast, right? We're going to put them into a book. I'm going to write the little caption story for everyone's photographs. We're going to see how it goes all around Ireland, 32 counties, every inhabited island. And then Elaine May, who's an amazing musician and producer, she's going to take all the voices and all the ambient sounds that we're recording. So Ronan, who you met earlier, he's our sound engineer, and he's going recording all these Foley sounds from, like, Glendalough, from the beaches, from the woods, from the city noises. Yeah. Elaine is going to take all that sound of Ireland plus the voices and weave them into, like, a soundscape.
Wow.
So that's going to be released as the vinyl that's going to accompany the book. It's going to be just, and then we're going to have a massive exhibition in spring 2027 to celebrate it all and bring the book out at the same time.
It's like a selection box of bleeding
it's Ireland. Yeah.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and we have to make sure all of Ireland is included.
It's represented.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when you put the call out and I reposted it for you, of course.
Thank you.
I love you.
But did I see your name in it, though?
My name in?
In the form. I know you reposted the open call, but did you enter the open call?
I knew that our paths were crossing. You just cleared me.
I'm going to go searching for you now. Pinocchio on the
corner. I was actually thinking, no, I didn't apply for it because I was thinking, well, I was in her previous one. She probably doesn't want to use me again.
How wrong you were.
But that you, when you put out the call, you were hoping you get 365. And as I spoke to you before we recorded, you've got much more than that.
I know, it's the middle of January and we've got 900 applicants. But I need loads for the logistic nightmare that is this project, right? Because I need to make sure, you know, the percentage of population that live in Leitrim, I need to make sure that percentage is fairly represented in the book. So I need people from Leitrim. I need people from Cavan.
So eight people live in Leitrim though.
Yeah, yeah, so well, one it'll all be... One person, yeah. And then I have to make sure the male and female split and the non-binary split is...
So there will be a bigger concentration of people from Dublin then?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, that's we're just doing it on statistics, so would be. But that's not to say like we're not going to travel everywhere. We're going to get in the camper van, and I like believe me when I say I'm going into the thick of it. Like I'm going to be gone for weeks at a time. I'm just going to be talking to people, and it's not just people who apply to be in it in the project. You know what I mean? They don't like because there's a lot of people out there that this project they'll never get a whiff of it ever because they're just they're in their routine. They're you know they do what they do. Every day, whatever it is, if it's on a farm, if it's on any, they just, you know, or they keep to themselves. They're the people that probably have the best stories and they're the people I want to talk to. So I'm leaving room in the project then to me to go and source these people and talk to people and go into villages and just chat and see who I can, you know, uncover.
So I'm just thinking as well, I know you have an application thing out and there's a format to do it. But have you ever been talking to somebody during the day of your day-to-day life?
Oh, yeah.
And been speaking to someone and went, you know, because you know when you're talking to someone after a couple of minutes that, you know, there's something there. Have you ever said to someone, like, listen...
I'm a divil for it. Yeah, like, I'm a divil. Sure, look, I was doing the chipper day the other night and I had a few drinks on me and everything. We always go to the chipper, but there's a vegan chipper, right? Class.
A vegan chipper?
A vipper?
What?
Yeah, the Vipper. Do you know McGuinness's chipper next to Babylon up the road from Whelan's?
What do they do? Just chips?
Do they have a whole vegan menu? They do homemade like battered sausages. I'm glad you hit your head. I'm glad you hit your head there. But they have a whole vegan menu and it's divine. And then your one that owned it was there and I just kind of caught a glimpse of her. I was like, do you own this place? She was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, I need to put you in my book.
So what do you get? What would you get out of a vegan chip or just as a matter of interest?
I love the garlic cheese chips, the battered sausage. You can get bean burger. She does this amazing homemade bean burger, which is unreal. All of her recipes she's done herself. It's like tofu bites, which is battered tofu and all this. Class, like, really. And all, like, pizza.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah,
when you're in McGuinness's, the right-hand side of the wall, normal menu. Left-hand side, vegan menu. Oh, it's just divine, like.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you know, I had about 20 sandwiches up at that funeral.
I'm
doing intermittent fasting at the moment. And do you know what? It's not so bad now. I'm on week two. I've had a couple of cheats. And by cheats, I mean, a couple of nights I've went into the press and I've got a couple of crackers or something. Nothing. Staying away kind of from the biscuits. From the biscuits and stuff like that. But. Look, because the new show I'm doing is called Flat White, and the reason it's called Flat White is because I'm getting rid of this. So hopefully, by the time I get on stage,
and you're doing it the old school way.
No, but I'm doing all different. This is what I'm saying to you about the vegan. This is where I'm going to come back around to the vegan thing. So I'm doing 6 weeks of intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to start on Saturday. I start Couch to 5K with the Shelters Running Community down in Port Marnock, and then I'm going to do like 6 weeks with a personal. I'll do 6 weeks trying to do high rocks and all the different stuff, but I'm going to come round to doing like vegan for a few weeks.
Do you know what? I've been vegan for a while now. My fella's also vegan, right? That had nothing to do with me, I swear. And the vegan thing for health is a trap. If you buy anything that says vegan on it, it's going to be, you have to look at the packaging and make sure it's not loaded with salt and fats and stuff. Like this vegan junk food craze, which is in at the moment. Like, I'm talking about McGuinness's chipper now. That's not healthy. It's a chipper.
It's fried in grease.
Just because it's vegan doesn't mean it's healthy. Like, you know, absolutely switch to veganism to get a higher dose of protein and lower dose of calories, all that kind of stuff. So, nutritionally wise, and do it smart.
Yeah.
But don't just go to the Aldi freezer. Section.
I have a bit of guidance because I've got a cousin of mine who's a vegan. He's called a vegan bricklayer on Instagram. He lives in Australia. And we've got a guy we know from Ballymun called Jerry Prendergast, who we're going to have in the podcast soon. He recently broke the world record a couple of weeks ago. He ran 60 marathons in 60 days.
Do you Jesus Christ.
And he's vegan as well.
Love that. Now, he's a great man to talk to.
Yeah, he is.
So once you do it right, like a lot of people are like, I tried veganism for 2 months and I ended up putting on weight. And it's like, that's because you're...
I felt dizzy all the time.
Yeah, that's because you're eating shite. Like, you have to eat good food. It's the same. Like, you know, I'm on Ozempic, right? And I absolutely love it. But it's the same thing. People are like, oh, I had a terrible time on Ozempic. You know, I was this, I was that. You know, I was dizzy and all that. And I'm like, well, that's because you're not eating the right food. You eat less, but you have to eat less of the right food.
Yeah.
You have to always look after what's going in. Do you know what I mean? It has to be nutritionally balanced. And you have to make sure you're getting your protein, your fiber, everything, your iron, all that stuff.
That's
so
a totally balanced diet that you're eating.
Absolutely. So that's crucial. Like, I find that absolutely crucial. Yeah, just have to mind yourself. Like, it's fuel at the end of the day.
The project you're working on at the moment, Ruth, and I've on your obviously see her on Instagram. You're, every day you're posting a little bit. Like, so if people wanted to check out the progress of this current project, your handle is Ruthless. Photography.
Oh, well, Ruthless Imagery.
Ruthless Imagery. God damn it.
That's a great name.
Thanks.
Ruthless Imagery.
Ruthless Imagery.
It's a brilliant handle. So if anyone wants to see this absolute, it's a piece of art in progress. It really is, Ruth.
Yeah. See if I make it or not.
You will.
If you want to put a bet on it, I think Paddy Power.
If you make 2.5 years on tour with Jose, I'm sure you'll make this.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I think I do have it in me. But yeah, if people want to sign up or they want to recommend.
You're still taking on?
Absolutely. For the whole year, because people won't hear about this project for another, they might not come to it. Like, so I need to be as fair as possible, be as open as possible to people. So if they want to recommend someone or they want to recommend themselves, if they think they have a story to tell, that's it. I just ask people about their lives, just a little story. Tell me a story. It's called Shin Scale Ella. That's another story, because it's just, I'm story collecting. Story collecting is all.
And
I
is
do.
It just really what interests you when you read it? Is that really it? Like, when you go, this person looks of someone of interest.
Well, you know, I get people to say, well, what makes you kind of unique? You know, and some people will tell me, and the stories people are telling me are wild. They're so, like, varied, and some of them are really, really heartbreaking. Some of them are hilarious, and some of them are just like, we're getting loads of different stories. It's mind blowing, really and truly. Like, and I'm very honoured that people are trusting me with their stories as well. So I mean, I'm only on day 14 as we sit here now, and I swear to God, I've got whiplash coming from story to story to story.
Like, I can just picture you down the pool with a few drinks, and then I go, sorry, I'll just wait. It is.
Oh yeah, wait, I'll tell you. Here, wait, now bring it up on me phone. I'll bring it up on me phone.
No, it is.
Only 351 days left.
Come here. I think you'll do it, and I think it'll be brilliant when it's finished.
I can't wait to see the final product. I really can't. You'll be all over the Late Late Show and everything. You will.
I hope so. Are you listening?
You're listening.
It's that project that big and full of interest. I think anyone would be dead keen to see, especially the big massive. You're going to have a big exhibition as well in spring next year, maybe.
Spring 27, with the book launch and stuff. But like, really what I'm doing is I just hope people are proud of it. I hope people are proud to be in it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best thing I can offer people. I hope that they're proud to be in this archive. And like the last book, Twilight Together, it might give. So I always think about the baby bumps that are in that one, right? So there's loads of pregnant women in that book.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think about those babies wanting to hear about what happened during COVID. They look to that book. I kind of hope that the 1-year-olds in 2026 in 20 years we'll use this book then to go back and say, what was it like living with me and my mum and dad, you know, generationally.
We look back at that picture and go, ah, Jesus, our dog's dead.
There's that too.
Yeah, Charlie. In the
You shouldn't have hit it with the fucking shovel, should you?
You know, stop.
You wouldn't see for the picture, photograph.
It was very violent, but you know, I took the picture on the same.
That's Ruth Medjbar.
That's me.
That was amazing. Because I don't know Adam, but I don't know you from Adam. And I have to say, I was kind of coming here today with kind of mixed feelings, going, oh, for fuck's sake. But I, like yourself, not in a bad way.
About how we could contribute.
Yeah, like, I was kind of going, and I even said it to the two lads inside. I said, I'm going to be piggybacking off the back of Eric in here. Genuinely.
But you didn't, though, didn't you? Held your own.
But you know why I didn't have to? Because you, like me, are a people person.
Yeah. Love chat.
And you're a chatter and you love talking. And I feel now, after being talking to you for the last hour, like, that you're my mate, like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, which is lovely.
There's that kind of, it's like, I know your ages as well, though I don't.
It's a very Irish thing. And that's, you know what, and that's what I'm trying to capture now for the whole next year. That little Irish thing where we're all actually mates down. No one's a stranger. Oh, everyone has a story.
Let's all be mates.
Let's all be mates.
It's not 7 degrees of separation. It's about 2, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. Sure, everyone I've done, it's day 14 and they're like, I know him. I know him. My God, Jesus.
So you have to rename the big family book.
Ireland's just a village.
It yeah. is.
It really, really is. World. I feel sorry for anybody that wants to cheat on the partner in this country because you are really...
That's
no,
a weird way to look
no,
at
I really
that's
do.
Where your
because
head
me,
went.
We're living in a very, very small country. So just if you are thinking of being...
For the cheaters
if you,
out there.
If you are thinking of being promiscuous, if you're out there, if you're a male or a female or non-binary or whatever you might be into... Think again.
Wise words.
We're not you.
We're watching you.
And in fact, Ruth could be taking a picture of you while you're doing it.
She actually is.
Through your window.
Yeah. Ruth Medjbar, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us on the
podcast.
Pleasure's
all mine, lads. Thank you so much.